Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Bottled in China. I'm your host, Emily Steckenborn, and this is the podcast where we talk about wine, food, beer, lots of cooking, and everything yummy happening out here in Asia. Today, I'm joined with Cohen Vissis, the executive chef of L. Willy F&B Group. So actually, the L. Willy Group is a really creative and well-known restaurant group out here in China. And throughout the years, they've really established themselves for really creating cool, sexy concepts. So today we're going to be talking about how Cohen gains his inspiration from all his travels, and most importantly, kind of sharing some really interesting food matches. So stay tuned. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Bottled in China. Today, I'm joined with Cohen Vissis, executive chef of L. Willy Food and Beverage Group. So welcome to the episode.
Yeah.
So this has been finally you're here. I'm excited because a couple people have recommended you actually to come on. And I think in Shanghai scene, you're one of the guys who is probably one of the most artistic chefs out there and really creative. So welcome to the show.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we try to keep it interesting with everything we do. So yeah.
So how long have you been in China?
I've been here for 7 years and a little bit. And on the way to the eighth. And it's been a while, you know. I can say I really understand the Chinese culture by now.
Well, I think, do you actually feel that because you've been here for a long time, the way that you see food in China and how you cook has changed?
Oh, definitely, definitely. When I first arrived to China, everything I cooked was either too salty, the rice was too hard, the pasta was al dente, but then they say, oh, it's undercooked and stuff like this, you know. So definitely the way I cooked has changed a lot. You know, all the dishes I make now are edible with chopsticks, for example. So we cut them up in small pieces. We make them look very attractive because the Chinese, they tend to take pictures a lot and stuff like this.
Yeah, oh, wow. Yeah. And so you're originally from the Netherlands?
Exactly, Holland, yeah.
Wow, okay. Okay, that's kind of crazy because I think that the Holland, talk to me a little bit about the food culture in Holland.
The Dutch food culture is not that famous, you know. We have really good ingredients, so we are close to the sea. We have a lot of good seafood. Then our country is 7 meters below sea level, so all the grass close to the sea is actually, it tastes salty. So then the lamb and the cow that they eat the grass, they also have this salty taste. It's
really
very delicious. Yeah, very good, very good. The big problem is that I think it's a religious thing, you know. So Holland originally is a Protestant country, mm-hmm. And then they're not like the Catholics, you know. The Catholics are much more, you know, open. They like to have much more celebrations. When they eat much more, you know. And in Holland, it's more common to be act normal, so you're crazy enough. So they've never really put a lot of attention into food, you know. It was just food as food meant to be, you know. Just eat to get full, maybe potatoes, vegetables, and a piece of meat. But this slowly is changing. You can see the same. It's in England, Scotland, mm-hmm. Germany, Austria. This same pieces. When you go down Belgium, then it starts to get better.
So when you say that, that's actually pretty interesting because I've been a couple times, and last time I went, you said, oh, this is interesting to go. And you told me like a different, it wasn't Amsterdam. It was out of Amsterdam. It was a beautiful city also.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Amsterdam, of course, is the capital, you know. It's very famous for many, many things. Very good museums, very good scenery. All the painters are from there. And then, of course, there's the red light district. You can smoke marijuana, whatever. But the whole country is like this.
Yeah.
But then Amsterdam's got the name, you know. So I would recommend if you visit the Netherlands, just visit Leiden, Haarlem, Utrecht, or any of the other cities who are just like Amsterdam, but without the tourists.
And which city in Amsterdam has probably one of the most interesting food cultures, though? Like, well, something hidden? Is there anything hidden, like an interesting city that's kind of hidden, known for food, either cheese or local cheeses, etc.?
Oh, yeah. Well, all have their own thing, you know. So Amsterdam is a city itself, but then Holland, the country, I would recommend The Hague, maybe. The Hague is on the beach. It's where our government is. It's one of the only countries where the government is not in the capital city. So Amsterdam is the capital city of the Netherlands. And then The Hague is the city where the government is. There's the government. There's a lot of head offices of the big companies. So, there's a lot of people going around. So you can find really good food there, you know.
Mm.
And especially there, because it's got a really big Chinatown. Indonesia has been a part of our kingdom for 350 years. So a lot of Indonesian restaurants are in The Hague also. So there's a lot of things to discover
there.
Of course, if you're looking for the best food of the country, it's in Amsterdam because it's the capital city. There's a lot of things going on. But because there's so many tourists, there's also a lot of crap.
You know? Yeah, that's true. So you have to filter through what's good and what's not good.
Yeah,
oh, wow. But then growing up, did you always have a passion for cooking? How did this evolve?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's my parents. You know, my parents, both of them love to cook. Actually, my father is very much into wines. You know, and he was a concept designer for a big advertising company. But then on his days off, on Saturday and Sunday, he was working in a wine importing shop, a little bit similar to what we have in Shanghai here to maybe Summergate or Torres, but then their boutique shop. So he was not working there for money, but every time he was working there, he took a bottle home. So he was really working there because of his passion and all this stuff. And I think he translated this passion to me. You know, when me and my brother were younger, even 8 or 9 years old, we were already with the wines, trying, not too much, of course, yeah, a little bit, but trying the wines. And then my mom was cooking something, or always very seasonal stuff, because the area where I come from, they call this a green heart, you know, so there's a lot of farmers around and stuff like this. So we used to go on the bicycle to pick up at this farm, we pick up asparagus, the next one we pick up the eggs, and then the next village was a small butchery where we would get the ham or stuff like this, and then we would cook the meal, and my father would have a really nice white wine with this, and he said, oh, we need to be like this. So then when I was 12 years old, it's very common in Holland that your parents encourage you to find a small job to start working, you know, to realize that nothing comes for free in this world, because before you just hold up your hand and your parents give you cash and stuff like this. Well, in Holland at 12, they say, okay, stop, like this. So on Saturday and in the afternoon, you go working. And as I said, I'm from the Green Heart. So in the Green Heart, it's very famous that there's a lot of flower business. Holland is very famous for its flowers also. So most of my friends, the most easy way to make some money is to go and work in the flower business. So you go pick the weeds, or you go sort the flowers all together. You peel the tulip bulbs and stuff like this. But I didn't really like that job. I found it a little bit gay, actually. So, so then I started working in a restaurant. And so I was a dishwasher in a restaurant. It was a very busy place. There was one chef. He was 55 years old by the time already. And he was really busy. So he started to tell me, oh, please help me pick the lettuce, peel the shrimps, scoop ice cream, stuff like this. So I thought, hey, hold on a moment. This is much more interesting than doing the dishes. So I went back to school, found a friend who did the dishes, and I started helping the chef only. And I did this for 6 years. The man was very old school, so I made mistakes. He hit me on the head and stuff like this. Very, very old school. But he taught me a lot. And then by the time I was 18, I had a certain quality to do things. So when I went to study, I just went I studied in The Hague, and then I went to the restaurant and I said, I can cook already and stuff like this. So I was able to make myself a living. So I studied hotel management in The Hague, but deep in my heart, I already knew I don't want to be a hotel manager. I want to be a chef. So after this whole study, I finished the studies. I quickly did a chef's education, but because I had so much knowledge about numbers and all this stuff already, I could do it in 28 weeks only.
Wow.
So, and then when I got the diploma, I flew to Dubai and I started to work in Berger Arab. I was 21 by then, and I thought I was a whole big man already and I knew a lot. But of course, in Dubai, there was another chef, a French guy, and he was from Biarritz in the south of France, almost Spain. And he kicked some ass also, but because I was used to a very tough chef, for me, it wasn't that tough.
Do you feel like, you know, you always get that stigma where chefs, some of the really top chefs are really strict, right? Especially in a kitchen, because there's so much pressure, there's things moving around, there's a limit on time. Do you feel now that stigma is kind of losing, that it's, you know, a lot of chefs are much more friendly, they're much more helping their team grow? Or do you feel that it's still the same? The top chefs are strict.
I think you need to be strict, you know? You need to be strict, there need to be one line, there need to be one rule, especially how I was brought up also, you know? I really believe you need to be very strict. It's this way and it needs to be perfect, and we cannot just today do like this, tomorrow do like this. I mean, if you come for lunch today and I cook you something really delicious, you come back tomorrow, you're expected to be the same, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So they're still strict, and they need to be.
Yeah, but then on the other hand, how I lead my team, especially here in China, because here in China, if you're strict and tough, the people, they won't listen to you, you know? So I honestly believe you catch more flies with honey than vinegar. So it's better to be a little bit sweet to them, but always direct them in the right way, you know? So we have set up a special system in our kitchen where every dish gets checked 3 times. one time by the first sous chef, second time by the second sous chef, and the third time by myself, you know. So then, yeah, we make sure it's always the same, that temperature is what? Right, the color is right, and stuff like this, because the Chinese themselves, what the Chinese are lacking passion, I feel, because they are much more in a different way of life. They're still in the survival modus, where I had a chance to choose whether I wanted to be a chef or a hotel manager or a painter or whatever, you know. We had all the chances we could wish for. These guys, they don't want to be chefs, maybe.
Really?
No, they are here for the money. They're here maybe because they're not from Shanghai. They're from Mongolia. I have many people in the kitchen from other parts of China, and they have to support a whole family. They need to, they're in for it for the money. So they try their best because they know if they do well, they make a promotion and they get some more money, but it's for the money. It's not for the
passion.
The passion, yeah.
I hope that's changing, because obviously I think any big city that's a food city, the best chefs have passion. You know, it's like you can't make the recipe without that, I think. So passion's a huge part of it. Mm. But I think it might be changing slightly, but you're probably right, where I think especially at the beginning, people would come in and their goal was just money. It wasn't to make something creative or to try to promote culture, food culture in China. But I think hopefully that's changing soon. Do you think that's changing?
I think so. I think so. This all comes with the country is doing better and better. I mean, compared to 7 years around 7 years ago when I just arrived, it already looks much different now, you know, and the people... Yeah, the people are changing, definitely. And I think also, but traditionally, being a chef in China is not a job that they look up to, you know. But now with all the cooking shows, and chefs are getting more and more popular, of course. I think TV has helped a lot, and then social media helps a lot, you know. So yeah, I hope it's going to get better and better.
For sure. Mm. Now tell me a little bit about El Willy Group, because this is pretty fascinating. It's one of the most known F&B groups in Shanghai, and now also growing out of Shanghai, and you guys are known for some crazy interesting dishes and always streamlined. I was laughing with Carlos last time he was on the podcast, always something sexy. So sexy tapas, sexy food, a sexy concept, which is something a little bit out of there. But I mean, tell me about how it all started and how you got involved in the El Willy Group.
Well, I came to El Willy 7.5 years ago, and by that time we only had one restaurant, El Willy, where Elefante is now. And then the restaurant was doing very well. China was doing very, very well. So we found this place on the Bund, brought El Willy to the Bund, and on our old location, we built Elefante. So we had two places. We had our cocktail, we had Bikini, a hot dog shop.
Yeah.
Then we opened Tomatito. Tomatito is our sexy tapas bar. And there, from there it went very fast. Two places in Hong Kong now. We have a place in Manila. We have Tomatito Manila there. We recently opened in Bali. We're under construction in Ho Chi Minh City. We have a place in the Netherlands also, in The Hague, where I studied. So yeah, we grew very, very fast.
So at the moment, how many restaurants do you guys have? Restaurants and bar together?
Oh, we have 8 or 9 places now, yeah.
And why the move to Vietnam? I mean, you've been to Vietnam?
Yeah, probably, of course, to open it, etc.
How was that? Because I've been hearing so much about Vietnam recently, and I'm kind of torn because I've never been. So I'm a little bit confused from here. You decided to go to Ho Chi Minh, and then there's also Saigon? No.
No.
Ho Chi Minh and Saigon is the same.
It's the same, yeah.
Saigon, but then you have the north also.
Hanoi, there's Hanoi,
yeah.
Hoi An, there's many cities, of course. Well, Vietnam, we're about to open. We will open in November. But what we chose, we chose our brand Tomatito, which is our sexy tapas bar, to expand. So we started in Shanghai. We have Tomatito Manila already. And we want to expand this brand and to bring it through Asia, to keep it interesting, because of course we can easily stay in China also, right? We can go to Chengdu, we can go to Beijing, we can do these kind of things. But I believe life is short, and everything comes in cycles, right? So you can only put energy in a few places for maybe a maximum of 10 years after you lose interest. So we need to keep it fresh, keep it going, and push a little bit. So the way it usually works, we meet people, right? So we travel a lot also to get inspired to eat new things. And then we meet people and we build a joint venture with them, and we, yeah.
So did you kind of change your menu for Tomatito out in Vietnam to kind of reflect?
Yeah, of course.
Really?
Of course.
What are some of the elements that you've changed?
Well, it all depends, you know. So I can talk about Manila because it's open already. Vietnam is not yet open, but the way it works, of course, the the best food you can only make with the best ingredients, right? Mm. And then the best ingredients you always source locally, because then they arrive most fresh. You know what I mean? Of course, we can get really good lobsters from Canada, for example. But yeah, it's better if we find a local ingredient, what is for so sure. good and so fresh. So the way we make a menu, it always depends on what is locally available. And then what is not available, maybe we can get it from somewhere, you know. So in Asia, for example, it's really hard to find local olive oil. Of course, this olive oil needs to come from other places, or good wine or stuff like this. But yeah, then the best things we just get from there, you know. So in Manila, they have really good seafood, they have really good prawns and stuff. So we play a little bit more like that, you know. They have this small citrus things they call calamansi, I think. And then we use this a little bit more. Then in Vietnam is very famous for its fresh herbs and all this kind of things, you know. So we can use this in our salads and stuff like this. Of course, we're not gonna cook Vietnamese food, but we will use our Western techniques on local ingredients and make it sexy. Yeah.
And how are people liking it? Because in Shanghai, I mean, it's taken off. People are so open to new ideas and new taste. How about in Manila, where it is open at the moment?
In Manila, it's really, let me knock on wood, but it's been a really, really good start.
And really?
We are open since Christmas last year. And it's been rocking. It's been a hit. We never thought it would work like this for us. Of course, it's also exciting, right? We go to a market we don't know. We don't know if they will accept our concept and stuff like this. But what I think, if you look around in Asia, I mean, Japanese food is really good. Vietnamese food is good. Thai food is really good and famous. Korean food is good. Chinese food is good. But then Filipino food is not that famous, and it's actually not that good also. So that's where a lot of the Filipinos, especially because they were, the Spanish were there also for a while, so they're used to this way of eating. They really accepted our concept.
That's really crazy. Mm. And what about Bali? I mean, because Indonesian food, when I go to Bali, I mean, it's not my favorite. Like, you know, maybe that's just me, but I do prefer Thai food. I think it has a lot more flavor. It's much more fresh.
Yeah.
When I go to Bali, I can't really say that I'm very crazy about Indonesian food.
No. Same thing. Indonesian food is not that famous. But then Bali is like a hotspot.
Yeah.
A little bit for people. A lot of people travel there. And we think in the future, more and more people will travel there.
So what are some of the key elements in terms of just flavor? When you traveled to Bali, what are some of the flavors that you were super impressed by, that you were tasting?
In Bali, they use a lot of the lemongrass. And then they call it jeruk purut. It's like a lime leaf, kind of very fresh flavors that we can use very well in our dishes.
Yeah, really?
That's good. Yeah.
I was, when I was in Bali, the place I always go to, they make pancakes in the morning. And they use like palm leaf or something in it, and so it's a green color, and it just tastes so good. I'll have to send you that recipe.
Yeah,
but it's like a couple local things that they do, which is so really good and tasty.
Yeah.
But again, I think that probably that's a really cool concept, just to bring in some of the key elements that are already in Bali and kind of make it, you know, hype it up a little bit and make it more tasteful.
Exactly.
So I'm looking forward for that.
Yeah, that's how it works, you know. And then, well, the good thing also is it comes back, right? So the chefs in every place got his head chef and stuff like this. So the guys in Manila and the guys in Bali and in Hong Kong, they keep on developing the menu. They come up with their own ideas also. And we upload this in a cloud. We have a cloud for all the chefs.
Yeah.
And then we can use it here in Shanghai too. You know, we can say, oh, this is a little bit of a... I mean, that's why we call it sexy tapas, right? It doesn't need to necessarily be typical Spanish, you know? It needs to be, Spanish backbone, but we can give it our own touch. Yeah.
What about the new project out in Netherlands?
Yeah.
I mean, are you going to be going there, or who's the chef? Because I know that you're kind of partnering and you're opening a lot and you're pushing so many things. Are you still going to be based in Shanghai?
Of course, yes. Shanghai is the mother. So see it like this. El Willy restaurant is still the mother of the whole group. So the way we work is always we hire new people. So the new head chef, the new leaders of the place, they first come to El Willy. So they stay in El Willy for example, 18 months or a year like this. Carlos from Elefante was 18 months, was the sous chef in El Willy. Julio, the head chef of Tomatito Shanghai, was 18 months sous chef in El Willy. Mm. So they really get the company culture, they get the DNA of the company, they learn what it is to work with us. And then, of course, they give their own touch to it, which is only beautiful, but they know how we work, and we know what are their strong points, what are their weak points and stuff like this. The head chef of Tomatito Manila was with us for a year too. the head chef who is in Bali now, he was with us for 8 months
really?
Also. So then the head chef in the Netherlands, he came to Shanghai too. He was with us here and then he went back. And when we soft opened the place 3 weeks ago, I was there with him to work with him. And now you would say, oh, why a place in Holland, right? Because everything is, it's in Bali, it's in Ho Chi Minh City. It's so far away, Holland. Well, when they asked us for this place almost 2 years ago already, they asked us, oh, we find this location, let's do something in The Hague, guys. And we were like, no, it's too far away.
Yeah.
You guys are crazy, you know, this doesn't make any sense. Then 6 months later, they call again, hey, guys, you really don't want to do it. We said, no, forget about it. Go to look for somebody else and stuff like this. And then we opened our restaurant in Manila and I was looking for new people because of course I sent my sous chef. I promoted him to be the head chef in Manila. And then, yeah, I need new sous chefs for Willy too, right? So we hired a couple of people. But it's really hard to hire people from Europe and that they come all the way to China, but you haven't really met them. And also you didn't see them cooking, right? You cannot ask on Skype, hey, fry me an egg or something. It doesn't make any sense. So sometimes the people arrive and it's not exactly what you're looking for. And this is, I think that's not good, right? Because it's not good for the candidate. It's not good for us. Nobody's winning here. And it's very costly to get the people here, organize mm-hmm. their visa. It takes so much time, you know? So then I thought, oh, wow. If we would have a place somewhere in Europe, you know, it would be good if we could just pick the people from there. And then it was like, oh, hold on a moment. But why don't we participate with those guys in the Netherlands there? And then maybe if there's two or three enthusiastic young people there, we can easily bring them to Asia because it's good for them. They can say, oh, wow, if I do well here, I can go to Bali, Hong Kong, Shanghai or Saigon. For the restaurant in the Netherlands, it's good because they can attract much more local talent because those guys, they know, man, if I do well, I can go international. And for us, it's good too. So in the end, yeah, we participated and we hope we find some good people there.
That's such a good launch pad for anybody in Europe who wants to go and travel overseas or wants to work overseas and who loves food. And I think that that's such a big eye-opening experience for a lot of people in Europe because all the places you just named are just so interesting and have such a rich food culture.
Oh, definitely.
So, I mean, that's just eye-opening to work there in general and just to taste the local flavors, to go and have your own, like, walk outside and just taste, like, street food. And that's crazy all on its own.
Yeah, definitely.
So how do you find inspiration? Because you really... all of your concepts that you're doing are so unique. The dishes are just so well done and they're always interesting flavors, you know? So how do you find inspiration?
Oh, we travel a lot. We go...
That's a good answer.
it's the best, you know? So every year we do a gastronomic trip with a couple of chefs from the city. And
with your team?
Of course, we cannot all leave at the same time. So many, many of our team, Willy always comes, myself, I come. Mm-hmm. This year, Carlos came with us to Spain, but two years ago we went to Peru.
Wow.
With 7 chefs, you know, and Peru is a really, really interesting country, long coastline, really high mountains, and the jungle, the Amazon, of course. So many things we don't have in Holland, for example. There's no high mountains, there's no jungle. So many, many interesting
things. There's grass
things.
Near the water.
Yeah, exactly, you know. It's super interesting. So we arrived in Lima first with those 7 mm-hmm. chefs. The wives were not coming. So we were, of course, partying also like crazy a little bit, you know. But then after, there was a big food festival on the beach. It's called Mistura. It's really, if you ever have a chance, please go there. So then you have all these people from all the corners of the country. They come to the beach and they cook their stuff there. And Peru is 5 times the size of Spain. So it's a huge country, right?
Yeah.
So then, wow, we were there. There were, I think it must have been like 150 food stands. And we were there. Wow, there was music. There was pisco sours.
Flowing everywhere.
And it was a big, big party. Happy, happy. Lots of food. And then we stayed in Manila. We cooked with the local ladies on the fish market. And then we rented a car. And we did a road trip all the way to Bolivia.
Mm-hmm.
So we took 2 weeks and we were cooking with the local people, tasting the food in the mountains, having all these ingredients from the Amazon and stuff like this, having a lot of people explaining us about those things. So yeah, it was very, very interesting. And then, yeah, you bring back those memories, you bring them back to Shanghai. And then, of course, you cannot copy because you don't have the ingredients, you don't have this.
Yeah.
But some things you can do, like the balance in between sour and spicy, like they use in ceviches or other things there. Well, I try to copy on other things, the way how they present, much more simple, the way they cook. A very good example there. They have a caja china, means like a Chinese box. So they have a big box. Metal box, they put a pork belly inside with the skin up, and then they put another metal tray on top. and they load it with hot charcoal. So the hot charcoal is in this metal tray, and this metal tray they press on the skin of the pork belly, so you get a really crispy pork belly, really nice.
Wow.
Yeah, stuff like this, yeah. And they call it the Chinese box, but here in China, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Did you try to bring that over? I mean, are you cooking that now or no? Did you ever implement that anywhere?
No, we try to make it here. So a lot of things to ship it here, it's very, very difficult because the China customs are pretty strict. But we are very good with our hands, so we make a lot of things. So a lot of metal works we do here, but also pottery that I like to do a lot.
Yeah.
So there's a pottery shop quite close to the river, and sometimes after lunch service I go there, and then I sit there. We put some music and we make some of our own pottery, our own plates. Because when I first arrived to China, it was so hard for the service to get them to explain what exactly was on the plate, you know. So they could say, oh, this is a crab cannelloni or something like this, but not all of them could do it. But also for myself, right? I just arrived to China. I didn't speak any Chinese. So how am I going to explain this is crap to a Chinese guy, right? I couldn't do it. So then I figured, okay, what if we do the pottery? Why don't we make it in the shape like this? So for the crab cannelloni, we designed a very cute little crab box. Then we do plates with chilies. We make an octopus. We do many, many, many pottery things there.
Yeah. But you do it basically all yourself, pottery?
Yeah.
Does your team come and you guys do like
a work day, and you guys do it? Yeah, of course. We try to keep it interesting. And most of the time we make one or two ourselves, and then there's a couple IEs there that they can copy for us, and they finish it and stuff like this.
That is crazy. I think that you put a lot of yourself in a lot of the restaurants that you do. It's very personalized and really kind of shows more the creativity that you guys try to bring in all of your restaurants.
Definitely.
Wow. My gosh. So before we're almost done, because we're almost running out of time, but most importantly for you, I mean, now that you've traveled everywhere, what is one of the spots in Shanghai, what is one of the dishes in Shanghai that you've taken and tried to make it kind of your own?
Oh, I have so many.
I've redone everything.
are we really almost running out of
time? No, well, we can definitely another. This is a good question. I would love to hear this. So yeah, I'm totally okay to go over time on this.
So when I first came to China, I saw the Chinese, they steam the bread, right?
Yeah,
so they
like
always,
the buns.
Yeah. The steamed things. And I thought, oh, wow, this is interesting. I'm gonna try the same. So I made a brioche recipe and I steamed it, and it became so soft, such a nice little fluffy bun.
Using brioche.
Yeah, using a brioche recipe.
Never thought
but then
of that.
I work in a Spanish place, so brioche is so French, right?
Yeah.
And then I had to change it a little bit. Well, the recipe of brioche contains a lot of butter, you know.
Yeah.
So I had to replace the butter, this fat compartment. I changed it with a Spanish sausage. It's a sobrasada from Mallorca. It's a really fat, like chorizo kind of sausage.
Okay.
I put it in the brioche recipe, and it became like a chorizo brioche.
Really?
So I use this, and I put a quail egg inside, I steam it, and then I serve it in a bird's nest, which is also Chinese. So it looks very nice. And then also when I just came to China, I had this soup, a seahorse and pork feet soup. And then the soup, what the Chinese do, they steam the soup. Right? In Holland, we always take the pot and we put it on the stove like they do in France. They do it everywhere. The Western, they do it like this. And then I start to steam soups. And actually the flavor is much more...
lighter?
I would almost say sexy, that we say a lot of sexy. It's lighter, it's much more elegant almost, right? It doesn't have this burnt taste and stuff like this. So we started to steam a tomato soup, for example, and to my surprise was that the pulp of the tomato and the water is separated.
Mm-hmm.
So then we take this clear tomato water and we make a jelly out of this, and it all came because I saw the Chinese... way of steaming soups. Also in our kitchen, we have a section where we just keep the woks and everything. It's not only for the guys to prepare their staff meal, but it's also for us to play with the Chinese way of cooking. I think it's really, really interesting. Nowadays, the Chinese cuisine, it doesn't have too much interest of the well-known chefs. You know, the well-known chefs, they travel to, for example, Noma is in Mexico now. They go to Peru and these kind of places. But sooner or later, they come to China because I think the Chinese cuisine is so interesting with all these different flavors from all the corners of the country. It's spicy, it's crispy, it's much more interesting than the Western kitchen. Much more, much more.
Yeah.
And I think sooner or later the people will come here, and then I hope we have advantage.
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty interesting, especially when you could learn a different technique. And then when you apply it and you create it and recreate it for yourself, the flavors are so different.
Oh, of course. Yeah, and totally.
Yeah. Okay, I could definitely imagine that. All right. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to throw five questions to you.
Sure.
And you have to answer as quickly as possible.
Okay.
And the last question is obviously going to be information about how we can contact you or how we can find the restaurants.
Oh, of course, yeah.
All right. So my first question is, what is your favorite dish in all of El Willy Group?
Oh, I can only say one. It's called the explosive...
Who's your favorite child?
No, the explosive Balek salmon. It's a dish. It sounds very boring with smoked salmon, honey, truffle, sour cream, and... But you need to, it's very interesting because you have all the flavors in one bite. You pick it up with two fingers and you have it in one go and it kind of explodes in your mouth. And I think that this is one of the best dishes around. Yeah, definitely.
Nice. What is, my second question, what is the best wine and food pairing you've had?
Oh, so many, but I love champagne, you know, so.
Just a little bit fancy, but yeah.
So when I was in school, we make these wine trips all the time, you know, and we went to Reims. Reims is the capital
yes.
of the champagne, of course. And there I was having this it was a very good champagne. I forgot the brand, but it came with a dish with green apples and it was it was amazing. You know, green apples and brioche, but the yeastiness of the champagne, of course, you know, it worked very, very well. Yeah. It was good. It was simplicity, but it was really, really good.
Oh, you got to bring that here. Did you bring it here?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Not yet? Okay, I'm waiting for that one. My third question is, when you look for inspiration, what is one of the countries you want to go visit so you can gain inspiration on a kind of cooking and gastronomic standpoint?
Oh, my next country to visit for sure will be Mexico. I think, you know, Mexico, it's a good... Good. They have all this spiciness and then this fattiness and it's almost this good mood food kind of thing, you know, and then it's spicy and it's very interesting, you know.
Yeah.
So next time definitely Mexico, but I've seen many places. I've seen Peru, that was super cool.
Yeah.
We went to Vietnam, was nice. Japan, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I'll travel to South Africa at the end of this month.
That could be crazy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, to see, of course, they also have different ingredients and then they have this,
nice.
Let's see, they have all this barbecue kind of stuff, so maybe I can do something like this.
Yeah.
I was in Australia last Chinese New Year, and they do all this healthy...
Vegan, raw.
And all this stuff, you know, which was new too. So, I need to make more menus, you know, so now for the lunch menu, I go here, for this there, yeah.
Yeah, I like how when you're talking about Mexico, though, you're kind of doing like a salsa dance while you're explaining, like, all the different spices, and you're actually dancing right now when you're saying
exactly.
No one can see it, though.
Yeah. My heart starts dancing a little bit thinking about all those things.
Yeah.
It makes me very enthusiastic. And it's because I love what I do. I love to cook. I love to create. And I love to... I do what I love. So
I love
hope
it.
People can... taste this.
Well, no, I think I definitely, you know, you definitely share your passion and you're very passionate about all the things that you do in cooking. And it's really wonderful to see because... You just have such an excitement and you've been here for actually quite over 7 years now and you still have that same flair and passion towards cooking and having new ideas. And really, that's something really fun to see and watch from afar because it's, you know, when somebody's so inspired like that, just everybody enjoys, you know, coming to see you, eating your food. Everyone enjoys that because you can feel that, you know, excitement towards that. Yeah. I love how we're going to wrap that up.
Yeah.
My last question, of course, is how can we contact you? How can we know more about the El Willy Group? How can we find your restaurants in Milan, in Netherlands, in Vietnam, opening up in Bali and all over China?
Yeah. Well, you can always find me because I always stay in a mother restaurant. So it's El Willy on Ban 22, fifth floor. And when you come, just ask for the chef, and if I'm there, definitely I will cook for you.
You'll pop up,
exactly. You know, and it's what I recommend if you go to any restaurant. You know, always ask if the chef is there and if he can create something for you. It doesn't matter where you go. In Japan, they call this omakase, and I like to do it in almost every, of course, not in a breakfast place, but if I go to a good place, I always ask to a chef you choose what is good
nice.
For me today. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that's really great. I think that's the one thing most people say. I hate when people come to me and ask to do something different off the menu, but that's good to know that you're very different in terms of that.
Oh, exactly. I think it doesn't need to be off the menu, you know, just let the chef choose what is the best today. And,
nice.
I like to do it, you know, it's much more fun.
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time today. Such an interesting conversation, and I'm so excited to see all the new restaurants pop up and open. And now I'm going to go to Bali soon. I'm definitely going to go visit the restaurant.
Chachara is the name, you know, in Seminyak area. So,
Oh, wow. All right. Awesome. Thank you so much, Cohen, for coming on.
Thank you.
Take care.